Surprise, surprise, even with me making announcements, I still forgot some. So I got a couple. So Amber has been in the hospital this past week, but she's here with us this morning. So let's remember Amber Anderson as well in our prayers and the potluck on Saturday at Carteret Park at 10:30, right around the corner over there. Other than that, I don't think I have anything besides welcome to our visitors. Maybe your first time. In fact, I think there are several of you who it's your first time. And we're grateful that you're here. And if you don't mind, you can fill out a visitor's card for a record of you being here. And we'd appreciate that. But we're glad to have you at another time. So if you're a first time, or even if you haven't been in a while, you might not be aware of what our church theme is this year. And our church theme this year is called Fulfilling My Purpose. And last Sunday, we began a new quarter as we began to talk about fulfilling my purpose that God has for me in work. And Michael laid out a great sermon about how God created us to work. And so we're going to talk about that this morning. And we're going to talk about it if you are choosing a job or if you already have a job, right? So growing up, some of us, we kind of have ideas about what we want to be. So on this list up here that Eddie put together at some point, one of the things was a lawyer. And so I was trying to think if we have any lawyers in the audience, and I don't think that we do. But maybe some of you want to be a lawyer, or you're like, man, I wish I had been a lawyer. You've got that in your head. Or maybe some of us, and we do have this clearly, a doctor. Or do we have any doctors? We don't, do we? We don't have a lawyer or a doctor. How crazy is that? But maybe somebody wants to go and be a doctor. We do have this one for sure. We've got owners. Maybe you want to be a business owner. You say, man, forget that. I want to own my own business. I want to be my own boss. And I'll tell you what I want to own. I want to own a landscaping company. I want to plow snow in the winter. I want to plant, be out in the garden all summer long. I want to mow grass because I don't have to be inside. I can't stand to work inside. So I want to be that. Or maybe you want to be a teacher. And teachers, they work how many months a year? Unless you're a teacher and you're like, shut up, I work all year long, right? But teachers don't get paid a lot. And so I know there's at least one of you in the audience who, as you told your family that you wanted to be a teacher, they're like, no, you don't. You're crazy. You don't want to do that. But maybe you did want to do that. Or you've got some other things up there as well, and you want to be a coach. That's kind of, in one sense, one of the things that I would have loved to have done if I had gone into actual teaching. I would have wanted to be a coach, but instead, what did I decide to do? I began to teach the Word of God. Some of you might want to be a preacher. By no stretch did I cover everything that you might want to be or that you might be in your work. But I want you to go back to the passage that Kenny just read for us in Ecclesiastes chapter 11. And I want you to think about what was just read for us as you think about when you are choosing your work. What line of work am I going to go into? And I want you to note down in verse 9 again of Ecclesiastes chapter 11. Rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart. This is what you're going to do. You follow your heart to what you want to do. Because dark days are coming, sad days are coming, things are coming when it isn't so good because of childhood and youth, they fade away, as some of you in the audience would firmly attest to. I can't do what I used to be able to do. I don't want to do what I used to be able to do. But some of you, I sure wish I could. It fades away. It goes away, so he says, walk in the ways of your heart, follow your heart. But here's the caveat to that. But know that for all these things, God will bring you into judgment. There's your principle. That if people ask me, what should I do? You should do that. You should follow your heart. If your heart says be a teacher and you're aware that you don't make a lot of money, follow your heart. If you want to be a doctor because they make a lot of money, follow your heart. But know that for whatever you decide to do and the path of how you get there, God will bring you into judgment. So I want to ask four questions as we think about choosing a job. That my purpose is just to make you think about it. And I'm talking about even if it's a part-time job for the summer, if it's a second job that you might try to get, or if this is going to be your full line of work, Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, or 7 to 3, or whatever it is. Will your job require you to promote sin? You might say, now Wes, what kind of jobs might require me to promote sin? Well, I had someone ask me not too long ago, they needed to find a way through college. I'm like, man, bartenders make a lot of money. They said, oh, it'd be a good idea. I mean, you take a class, you become a bartender, and boom, there's my money right there. And by the way, I can go to school in the day, I can work at night, there's my money. Well, what do you think about that? Well, I'm not the one getting them drunk. But drunkenness is a sin, right? And what am I trying to do as a bartender? The more I excel, probably what kind of tips do I get? The better tips that I get. So of course we had a long conversation about, I don't believe that is a job in which a Christian should do. Or you might say, okay, I would never be a bartender. I remember growing up, I wanted to be a radio show announcer. And my mom said to me, and we were on our way to church one time, she said, you do realize that if you take that, you're going to have to be doing promos for drinking and for things that you don't believe in. And what are you going to do about that? And I thought, well, I don't know. I hadn't thought about that. Because a lot of times we just don't think about what our line of work will actually cause us to do. So now guess what I do? Every time I'm listening to the radio and there's a sports talk on and the promo comes on for, here is this great bar that you need to go to. Here is this great alcohol you need to go to. Here is this casino that you need to go to. And I think, I wouldn't be able to do that. I wouldn't be able to put my stamp of approval on it, even though I'm not doing it. And you say, Wes, the Bible doesn't say anything about that. Well, I think it does. I want to remind you of a story of a man by the name of Balaam. You remember? He's the guy that the donkey talked to him. And so in Numbers chapter 21, a king is afraid because the children of Israel come in and they have wiped out another nation. And they are now camped in their area. And they look out there and they say, uh-oh, they're going to get us too. And so he goes, you know what I'll do? I'll get a diviner. I'll get somebody who can come in and he can put a curse on them. And I'll hire him. He'll come in. He'll curse these people. So he says, I'll pick Balaam. So Balaam is chosen. And Balaam is like, hey, all I can do is say what God says. That's all I can do. And he says, so whatever. So he goes to the Lord. Balaam goes to the Lord. He says, Lord, what should I do? Do whatever's in your heart. Kind of the idea. Well, king comes back because Balaam said, I can only do it what God says to do. So man comes back with people more honorable. And apparently with more money. And says, I want you to give a curse to these people. And Balaam, you can kind of just see him just kind of chomping at the bit. I want to do this. But he goes back to the Lord and says, Lord, what do you want me to do? And the Lord kind of reluctantly says, and I shouldn't say reluctantly, but just kind of like he does with us. When we really want to do something, guess what he does? He lets us do it. Go. So we go. But you will only be able to speak the words that are in my mouth. So he gets up on the mountain and he's beginning to curse them, but instead God sends out a blessing in his mouth. And the king's like, I didn't pay you to bless these people. Oh, sorry. Try it again, second time. Gets up there, go and curse him. Blesses them again. Do what? How again? Third time, fourth time. Finally had enough of it. Well, we learned a little something else about Balaam. Balaam tried to curse the people, but God wouldn't allow him to do that. But I want you to turn to Revelation chapter 2, and I want you to see what the New Testament tells us he did. He wanted the money. There's another passage in 2 Peter chapter 2 talks about he was greedy for that. He wanted the wealth that came from unrighteousness. But in Revelation chapter 2 and verse 14, we're picking up in the middle of a letter that was written to the church of Pergamum. He said, I have a few things against you, and that's those at the church there. You have some there who hold the teaching of Balaam, who taught Balak to put a stumbling block before the sons of Israel so that they might eat food sacrificed to idols and practice sexual immorality. Balaam was not able to actually curse them, but he was able to tell the king what would get them angry in the sight of God. So do I want to be a part of a work, of a business, in which the things that I am promoting are the things that God hates and the things that God gets angry at? You need to think about that. So maybe you want to be an actor. Or you want to be a director. Am I going to portray a sinful role? Or am I going to put sex in my movies and in my music to sell? You've got to think about those things. Second question I want to ask you. Will it require me to defend sin? The work that I'm in, will I have to stand up and try to defend somebody who has been wrong? Such as a divorce lawyer, right? God clearly says in Matthew chapter 19, what God has joined together, let not man separate. And he goes on to say, because from the beginning it wasn't so, and on and on and on, because there's one reason for a divorce, right? Verse 9, unless it's for sexual immorality, it's adultery if you marry another. Well, could I do that line of work? Well, what if I'm just a regular defense lawyer? So I've got a client who murdered somebody. And what I'm trying to do is I know that they murdered them, mind you. But I'm trying to use the law in my favor to keep them from being punished by the law. So I'm going to say the cops did a bad job. They tainted the evidence. Even though I know good and well my client murdered so-and-so. What do you think about that? What does Romans 13 think about when you break a commandment of the law and the purpose of the law governing authorities? In verses 1 and 2, let every person be subject to the governing authorities, because there is no authority except from God, and those that exist have been instituted by God. God put them in place. Therefore, whoever resists the authorities resists what God has appointed, and those who resist will incur judgment. So am I going to try to keep people from getting the righteous judgment that they deserve? It's an interesting thing to think about, isn't it? I'm not saying one way or the other, but it is something to consider. Will I have to defend it? Or maybe I'm a receptionist at an abortion clinic. Do I have any part in that? Well, I have to defend sin and what my business does and the legitimacy of my business. Will I ever have to defend that? Will it require me to do that? Or, let's get to it. Will it affect my ability to worship? Kind of these other things have been kind of, I'm going to use the word term judgment calls, but not everyone is necessarily going to come to the same conclusion about it. But will it affect my worship? Christians gathered together to worship. You would see that in the book of Acts, in Acts 16, right? So in the city of Philippi, there was no synagogue, but it was Saturday, the Sabbath, when guess who would gather together to worship? The Jews would worship. And they're in this city where there is no synagogue, the place where they would normally gather, but where they would gather in those cities was by a river, and they would get together to pray. And so what did the Jews do on that day, even though they were in a city? And we know that Lydia was not from that city. And we know that Paul was not from that city. What did they do? They went to the river to pray. They sought it out. They sought a place to worship. They did that. And then the church, you would see in Acts chapter 20, in the verse that we use to say we should take the Lord's Supper every single Sunday, is that when they are in the city, Paul is going on his way back to Jerusalem. And it would seem as though it would be easier for him just to have kept on going. But he delayed. Why? Because the saints gathered together to break bread. So is my job going to affect my ability to do that? Maybe it will some days. What about a job that's going to do it all the time? I think about a professional athlete. They play games on Sunday. Baseball, they play every Sunday. Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Every Sunday for what, 8 months out of the year? Golf. If you're lucky and you are good, you will play on Sunday. Football. If you are good and you make it to the highest level, you will play on Sunday. So what am I supposed to do? Follow your heart. But know that God will bring you in to judgment for all these things. There's a thing. And we might say, well, I can do all this good. I will reach all these people that I couldn't have reached before. Maybe so. Maybe that factors into the equation. But am I keeping the commandments of God? Or do I say, okay, it's not a big deal this time. I'll do what else? We have to think about those things. Follow your heart. Or let's say you got a family. Will my work affect my family? So maybe you are a newlywed couple. Or maybe you've got older children. Many times, what are you thinking about of, where am I going to raise my children? Is this a place that I can see us raising our kids? Right? So a job comes up. And it is in the middle of New York City. You don't see a lot of families picking up their children from other places and moving to New York City for work, do you? It doesn't happen a lot. What you see is people who are young without children moving out of New York City to raise their children. I think Lot is an example of part of the reason why family is important when you're making a decision about your work. Look at Lot back in Genesis chapter 13. Remember he and old Abraham, they both had a lot of herdsmen and they had a lot of possessions and they were close. But their own herdsmen began to argue and fight with one another. And so they say, okay, we're going to separate. And Lot gets to choose. Abraham says, you choose. And he looked and he chose what was the best looking area. It was green, it was lush, it was great. And it was near Sodom, which verse 13, the men of Sodom were wicked, great sinners against the Lord. That's the area that he chose to move his family to. I want you to notice something in the verse right before about Lot where it says he lived. So Abram settled in the land of Canaan while Lot settled, and here's a little distinction, among the cities of the valley and moved his tents as far as Sodom. So he's dwelling around the area, but he's not there yet. Well, guess what happens? Sodom makes a king mad. And these five kings come up against these other five kings. And guess what happens to old Lot? He gets taken. He gets kidnapped. And all of his stuff is taken. And guess who comes to bail him out? Old Abraham comes to bail him out. But notice where he was when he was taken captive, verse 12. They also took Lot, of chapter 14, sorry. They also took Lot, the son of Abram's brother, who was dwelling in Sodom, and his possessions, and went their way. Because where was he at, verse 11? They took all the possessions of Sodom and Gomorrah and all their provisions and went their way. Because he was there in that city. Remember how bad Sodom and Gomorrah were, right? So bad that there weren't even 10 righteous people living there. New Testament calls Lot a righteous man. But I want you to notice what it says there in chapter 19 and verse 1, where Lot is now. Lot is now sitting in the gate of Sodom. He is now a part of the government of Sodom. He didn't start out there. He started out outside. And then he moved into. And then he became part of that culture. And what happened to his wife? As they're told to leave, don't look back. Looks back, turns into a pillar of salt, and now Lot has no wife. Why? Because they moved there. His daughters, their in-law, their husbands-to-be, were told, get out of town. I'm going to destroy this place. But they laughed. They thought he was joking. So they stayed back, and they were destroyed. So finally, Lot makes it out and his two daughters make it out. But now none of them have spouses. And the daughters say to themselves, let's get our dad drunk so we can have children by him. Terrific idea, right? You see what happens when you don't consider the area in which you're moving to and the line of work in which you are choosing, what that can do to your family? You might make more money, but you might lose your kids and your wife along the ride. Follow your heart, but know that for all these things, God will bring you into judgment. Quickly, once you have a job, you've chosen your profession, you're here, you're there. What do you think the principle is? Follow your heart. But know that for all these things, God will bring you to judgment. So I got four questions here. Do I give my best effort? You know, there's a statement. I want you to go to Ecclesiastes chapter 9, two chapters before. And here's an interesting thing. In verse 10, he says, whatever your hand finds to do, kind of like follow your heart. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. And notice his reasoning for that. For there is no work or thought or knowledge or wisdom in Sheol, the grave, to which you're going. Why give the best that you've got now? Because when you die, you don't get to do it anymore. And don't coaches say that to their teams? It's the championship game. Lay it all out there on the field. Because you got nothing else to play for. This is what it's all about. And whatever our hand finds to do, that's what it's all about. So am I one who, when I get into work, I just go through the motions? Or am I someone who loves my job? Is passionate about my job, does the very best that I can, and is always working to improve at my job. No matter if I get a pay increase, no matter if that thing happens, but I understand that this is all I've got, and I am going to give the best that I've got. That's what God expects of us. He expects us to give the best. Well, do I lie or deceive? Maybe I'm a salesman. Do I not tell you the whole truth? Or maybe I kind of want an extra day off of work. And so I'm not feeling so well. Now I've got sick days to use. I call up, I say, sorry, I can't come in today, I'm sick. And you could come in. But you don't want to come in. Did you lie? Did you deceive? You do that. Maybe, maybe not. You might just flat out lie. Man, I'm sick. I'm down with the flu. And you're out on the golf course. Or you're out on a shopping excursion. You can't fool Christ. Christ is our master. He's our boss. And you would see that. And I'm sure Michael or myself will talk more about this passage in Colossians chapter 3. And the last verse 23. Whatever you do. And again, it's like whatever your hand finds to do. Work heartily as for the Lord and not for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the inheritance as the Lord. You're serving the Lord Christ. You can't fool Him. You might be able to pull it over on your boss, but you can't fool Christ. So notice the last verse of 25. The wrongdoer will be paid back for what he's done. There is no partiality. It doesn't matter. You do wrong, the Lord will take care of it. So you're a business owner, right? Third question. You've been working. You finally got enough. You got your own business. How do I treat my employees? Chapter 4 and verse 1. Masters, treat your slaves justly and fairly. Why? Because you have a master in heaven. You've got to answer. So how you treat your employees, that will affect how the Lord treats you. And I want you to see a passage that's kind of random in one sense. In James chapter 5. Like if you're reading through the book of James, it's a very short book. You're going to come to James chapter 5 and you're going to be like, do what? Where in the world does this really come from? And there's some debate about this particular passage. But he addresses the rich in verse 1. And something is coming upon them. Verse 2, he tells us what's happened. Your riches have rotted and your garments are moth-eaten. You had all this money. You had all these fancy clothes. They're gone. Verse 3. Your gold and your silver have corroded. Their corrosion is evidence against you. That you will eat your flesh like fire. Because you laid up treasure in the last day. Doesn't sound good, does it? Now notice why this is coming. Verse 4. Because behold, the wages of the laborers who mowed your fields, which you kept back by fraud, are crying out against you. And the cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord of hosts. You kept back from the people who work for you by fraud. And guess who answers that? The Lord of hosts, the Lord of Sabaoth. That's the Lord of the armies of heaven. He is coming to get you. Don't take advantage of your employees. You treat them justly and fairly. And finally, do I value the most important things in life? I got work, and I want to be well off. I want to be comfortable. But when it comes down to choosing work or other things in life, do I have the ability to step back from work to choose the things which are most important? You say, well, what's more important than work? I want you to go back to the story of Lot and Abram. Back there in chapter 13. You remember, as we said, they both have a lot of stuff. And they have many herdsmen and servants. But notice what they both valued here. Look at verse, let's begin with verse 6. Land could no longer support both of them dwelling together, for their possessions were so great that they could not dwell together. And there was strife between the herdsmen of Abram's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. Now verse 8. Abram said to Lot, "Let there be no strife between you and me, and between your herdsmen and my herdsmen, for we are kinsmen. Is not the whole land before you? Separate yourself from me. And if you take the left, I will take the right. And if you take the right, I will take the left." What did Abram value more than money, than the best lands? He valued peace between him and his kinsmen. And sometimes you may be in a business decision where you may have to choose peace over money. Where you may have to give up some dollars and some cents because something is more valuable than that. Follow your heart, but know that for all these things, God will bring you into judgment. Our work is serious, isn't it? Our work is serious. Fulfill your purpose. Follow your heart. But be ready. You're going to have to answer. This morning has not been a lesson about becoming a Christian. But if you're aware of what you need to do this morning, or you need the prayers of the congregation, we'd ask that you would come now as we stand and as we sing.